Ed, as the kids say, it's been a minute.
Man, it's been many minutes, my friend.
It's been many minutes. And I want to assure everybody who listens to the pod, I don't know if anybody listens anymore. We may have scared everybody.
Sure they do.
We haven't abandoned you. We haven't abandoned the pod. We were just taking a long summer hiatus.
We didn't break up. We're not going solo. There's no...
we're not breaking up. Yeah, not yet, anyway.
Not yet.
No, we were just taking some time off. Ed and I both, busy summers. Lots of stuff happening.
Lots of stuff.
Trips, plans, events, so forth and so on.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Very, very busy summer with all the usual summer things. But we've missed you guys. And I really appreciate, you know, so some folks have reached out and said, hey, we miss you guys. And when are you guys going to be back with something? And I gave a little tease that we would be back with something. And just to let you know, there's something in the works that Jared and I were going to do a quick hit little pod. But
yeah,
today is Wednesday, the 26th of July. And what brought us together tonight is the news of Sinead O'Connor passing.
Yeah, we got that news this afternoon. And she was only 56.
Yeah, so young.
Lady,
yeah.
Sinead, yep. Really young. And we thought that it would be respectful, if nothing else, to take a, maybe we've talked about Sinead before. You can't talk about Prince without talking about Sinead.
Yep.
She's going to come up, but we thought it might be a nice way to honor Sinead. And we'll talk about her a little bit more in a minute, but we thought maybe what we would do is take a look at the four different like official versions.
Mm-hmm.
Of Nothing Compares to You.
Yep.
Three of them are Prince related. And of course, Sinead's famous version, and just sort of talk about the evolution of the track and how that song changed and how it impacted everyone's careers. And we thought that would be a nice way to honor really one of the giants, I think, one of the giants of like particularly late 20th century pop music. Ed, you never saw Sinead, right?
Never did. And I got to tell you, it's sad that sometimes it takes something like this to trigger you to say, hey, I got to go back and look at her catalog. But I do. I've always liked Lion and Cobra from what I recall of it. But I was never a huge Sinead a fan. I think I appreciate her more in kind of looking back at her career.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we even talked on one of the pods about the famous, you know, when she ripped the picture of the Pope. And
right.
I remember, you know, being, even though I'm not a practicing Catholic by any means at the time, I was shocked by it. I was like, what the hell's that about? But you go back and you think about what that was, why she did it. And you're like, man, she was way ahead of the time.
She was way ahead of her time. And for anybody who doesn't know, she was doing that to protest the abuse of children by priests in the Catholic Church. And now the church as an organization work to cover that up. And obviously, as we all know by now, it was an abuse scandal that spanned, Jesus, I don't know, thousands of children over
decades upon decades.
Yep. So Sinead was in the right about that. And, you know, and Ed, like, you know, I think it's easy to have maybe lost track of her career wise. I mean, she was canceled before canceling was a thing after
that's
that.
That's so true. That's a good point. Yeah. You know?
But she was very artist. She sort of stood around a lot, you know. So she released those first two records, as you said, The Lion and the Cobra, and then I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got. And I've said this on this pod before. For money, those two records are as good as anything anybody ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Those records are exceptional albums. But then after that, she did an album of standards, you know, at the height of her fame. She did, and then she sort of came back and kind of went a little bit more into a pop direction. She released a reggae album. You know, she converted to Islam. She was a unsanctioned Catholic priest for a while. You know, she was just sort of,
yeah,
she was all over the place. And Sinead's, I don't think this is anything controversial to say, her struggles with mental health were well known.
And she had some tragedy too in her life with her son's death and a lot of things were going on too, right?
Yep. Yeah, her son, Shane, I think his name was, he killed himself 18 months ago. She herself was horribly abused by her mother as a child, which ties into Nothing Compares to You, and we'll get there when we talk about that. But she was also diagnosed as being bipolar. But you know, for all of that, for all of the sort of the fluid nature of her career and sort of finding, you know, I felt like Sinead was always trying to find something to plant her feet on, to feel grounded. That is my pop psychological analysis from 100 million miles away. But that's what it always seemed to me. And I was always a really big fan of Sinead because, I mean, that voice that shakes the heavens, as far as I'm concerned. But I always thought she was trying to find some place to land that felt safe. And I don't know that she ever did. And I'm sorry for that. And I'm sorry for her. And I hope that now, we don't know as of right now, as Ed and I are recording this, we haven't heard how she died. I hesitate to speculate, but you know, she did try to take her own life after her son died, and there was intervention that people, friends and family helped her, and she had three other children. And anyway, I don't want to suggest that she committed suicide. I don't know that, but she was not well, to put it that way. She was not well. But it is worth, for anybody who's curious, and Ed, like you just said, I know you are, it is worth going back to examine her catalog. There was a lot of really good stuff there beyond those first two records. But if you're not familiar with those first two records, Beyond Nothing Compares to You, I really encourage you to give them a listen. They're extraordinary records. I think so. We talked about this before too, and I read her memoir that came out a couple years ago called Remembering, and her documentary, which is titled Nothing Compares, just was released on video direct, you know, streaming just a few months ago. And it is also worth a watch, I would say. I also never saw her live. I had an opportunity in 1994. She was supposed to be on the fourth Lollapalooza tour that I had tickets for. The fifth Lollapalooza tour, 95. So that tour was Sonic Youth, Hole, Cypress Hill, Beck, the Jesus Lizard, if you remember the Jesus Lizard, and the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones were on that tour. And Sinead was supposed to be on it. And she pulled out before the tour got to Philly. So I never got to see her. And she toured very rarely. It wasn't often that she toured. So I'm sorry that I never got the chance to hear that voice live.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And obviously, I wish I could have heard her live. You know, that would have been amazing. But I think, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to go through these songs. You know, I gave them a fresh listen. I think you did as well today. We listened to all four versions that Jared just had mentioned. And I think we're going to find, like, it's so interesting how her version stands apart from the other versions of the song. So yeah, why don't we walk through them and we can just go in kind of in chronological order and talk.
Yeah, let's do that.
And that sounds like a good plan. So folks, as you know, a couple years ago, the estate released the Originals album, which had Prince's original demo of Nothing Compares to You. It was also released as a single and a video at the time. So I went back. I'll be honest with you. I didn't listen to it that much when it first came out. I have not been. I feel I'm very delinquent as a fan in this regard. I did not really listen to that Originals album much at all. Slap me on the little slap on the wrist, I guess, or something for that. But it was quite interesting to go back and really give this version, this original version, a listen. And the thing that struck me, Jared, and I guess I can start and then maybe you can jump in after I go, was just how it was arranged, right? So you got, in terms of personnel here, it's Prince, as you would imagine. This is back in 84-ish that this was recorded. It's an all Prince event, pretty much. He's on all the instruments, all that stuff. However, Susanna is there doing some backing vocal, and there is some saxophone on this. So we got Eric involved. What struck me in this arrangement and this sound of this particular version is it starts off, it has this slightly off key keyboard note that's I don't know if you had the same, you got this impression I did, Jared. It's almost like a ticking clock. Like, I thought it really emphasized, you know, this whole seven hours and 15 days thing. And just like, it was this propelled, like, clock ticking, 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 ticking throughout the song, and it really just continually counter on this heartache and pain that this person was going through. Has some guitar use, which is not really present in any
other version.
Maybe the live version has some little rhythm guitar accents, but like in terms of like a rock guitar sound, this is the only version that has that kind of quality to it. And the drumming is such a standout in terms of it's so present in this version. He's using live drums. There's tons of cymbal crashes. Like, I was really taken by how much the cymbal crash was used. And as with almost all the versions, and it'll be interesting as we compare it to the Sinead version, that prominent is so prominent in this. It's a little stripped down during the verse, but when that part of the song comes on, everything comes in. All the instruments are in, the drums are in, added vocals come in, cymbal crashes to the end of time during that part of the song. So that was really prominent. It was a very important piece of the song for Prince because it was so prominent in pretty much every version that he produced. You do hear a little bit of sax, because I mentioned about Eric being in it, and it's almost exactly the same solo that's used in the family version. So it's interesting to hear the origin of that. It's interesting how he plays around with some backing vocal ideas here, because he has Susanna kind of duet with him, which is not dissimilar from what happens in the family version with St. Paul Peterson. However, there's a second verse where he just uses his own voice layered as a backing vocal, and I found that really interesting. I thought his vocal was really good for like just an original demo. Like, it was clear, it was emotional, but it was like, it wasn't overly emotional. It was not histrionic in any way. I thought it was just a really clean, beautiful take on his vocal. I just generally, for me, like, the arrangement of it reminded me interestingly of, and I don't even know if it tracks to when that recording happened, but you know the song Another Lonely Christmas?
Yes, of course. We did a whole pod about it.
Yeah. So, that's right. We did. Thank you. I forgot about that. That wasn't that long ago. No. It reminds me a little bit of the feel of that song, because there was a lot of like rock guitar brought in, drums brought in for a pretty sad feeling song. So it had a similar, like, he was taking a similar shape to it. So it was very interesting to me. I don't feel like it's definitive, but it was a very interesting take for me. What did you think when you listened to it?
I agree with you. You know what occurred to me as I listened? I was thinking about, how do I want to say this? Like, it felt like an attempt to make this track epic in and on its own merit, but still be a demo. Right? So there was I felt like there was a weird but interesting sort of tug and pull with it. Like, it's like Prince couldn't resist his own instincts as a producer to want to make it big, even though this is essentially a demo for someone else to do. So I was thinking about that there's this sort of weird tug and pull between the intention of what this track was supposed to be for. I thought that was really interesting. It does feel, I really agree with you, it feels very full. And I think, to me, that says that Prince recognized the power of this particular track. And we've talked about, you know, obviously we've talked about this song before. I think it's a top 10, top tier ballad of his, although it's not a love song. It's it's a lost love song, right? Because I don't get the impression through any versions of this, and we'll talk about Sinead's has a slightly different tweak to it, which we'll get to, but I don't get the impression that in any version, the subject who is being sung to ever comes back, never changes their mind, never returns, you know? And so that in its own way makes it very unique in terms of subject matter. So I that's something I really like. You get the sense of that here, but it's funny now to listen to it when we've heard these different versions. Of course, it's also been covered by 1,000 people. It feels a little busy to me now.
Yeah, right? No, I'm with you. It does. I agree with you.
It feels busy. Like, it feels like there's so much happening in it. That saxophone, which you rightly say is also sort of almost note for note in the family version, which we'll talk about next. That's such an 80s sax sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, even for Eric Leeds, it feels like our guy was saying, "Hey, Eric, I want you to play it like, you know, a Doobie Brothers song." Or
did you hear "Careless Whisper" recently by George?
"Careless Whisper." Go for that. Hey, side note: I just watched the Wham documentary. Did you watch it?
So good.
It's so good. So good. Fascinating. That's a side note. Yeah. People watch the Wham documentary. It's very interesting.
Yeah, very good.
But yeah, it's cool and fascinating and an neat exercise to go back to this early version to hear what he's grappling with, the scale and size of this song, and fighting his own instinct to be the giant sir.
No, I'm with you. I think that's really insightful. I think that's true. And I don't think we talked about this when we mentioned the live version off the Hits album, but I was doing a little mini research, talking to some of the interns, and was surprised to find that
you kept them on all summer.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, they were just cleaning up. They're just, like, you know, sorting some files and such.
Sure.
Prince was, it's purported that Prince was partly inspired about writing the song by a woman named Sandy Scipione, who was his personal assistant in the 80s. They did not have a romantic relationship, but she had to leave suddenly after her father died and left him. And it's purported that this song is partly about her having that quick departure and she not being around.
That's interesting.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
You know, a quick sidebar here, because, you know, I always find a way to connect our guy to Bowie.
Please do.
My other guy. Bowie's much maligned 1987 album, Never Let Me Down, which is an album I actually like.
I like it, too. I had it. I bought it when it came out.
I think it's a good record. The title track, Never Let Me Down, is about his longtime assistant. That's who that's about.
That's so funny. There it is.
So there's another one.
There it is.
Anyway, so that's that version. And folks, just so you know, I'm sure you could already guess this, Ed and I are going to circle back around, and we're going to do the entire Originals album. We are going to get there. It'll be a little bit down the road yet, but we are going to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's move on. So now for me, this is the definitive version is the family. I mean, this is how I got introduced to the song. I was struck by this track from the very first moment I heard it.
It's been 7 hours and 13 days since you took your love away. I go out every night and sleep all day since you took your love away. Since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. I can see whomever I choose. I can eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant, but nothing, I said nothing, can take away these blues. 'Cause nothing compares, nothing compares to you. Nothing, nothing. It's been so lonely.
So I have a lot of feelings about this version of the track. So let me just talk through it a little bit. So what I love about the track is just it. I think this his arrangement here is genius. Now, we went from, as you just described, I think very fairly, a pretty involved and not, I don't say complicated arrangement, but like you said, there was so much going on. A lot of instruments, a lot of drums, a lot of cymbals smashing and crashing. So you start this version of the family, if you guys are familiar with it, right? It starts with some simple synths, a synth that brings you a couple quick notes that just kind of sets the tone, and then it isolates to St. Paul's vocal. And right. That epic line gets delivered clean without anything underneath except the vocal. Yeah. And, you know, everyone talks about that first line. I mean, it's like an epic first line. And to allow that to just showcase that line and pulls you in. I mean, that's how I felt about it. As soon as he delivers that line, St. Paul does, it just pulls me right into the song. And you're like, you're just sucked into this feeling, this vibe, this devastation that's being presented by the vocalist here by him. And I love the strings. I think the Claire Fisher arrangement here, like, it's just enough lift to suggest that there's something beautiful about the pain and longing that's happening here. I think that's such an interesting idea to present musically within a song that's about devastation and being so lonely and sad and longing, right? Something else here. There's not a lot of Prince songs that don't have drum tracks.
Yeah.
They're pretty rare. And this has no rhythm track at all attached to it. The only time there's any sense of rhythm is when he uses string accenting to hit certain lines that I think he wants to make sure there's an urgency. There's a sort of peak of emotion to, like, nothing can stop these lonely tears from falling. That's being like hit and accented with strings stabbing that or violins. And then I went to the doctor. Guess what he told me? It adds this urgency to the vocal and what's being said that I think it's a brilliant arrangement. I know you made fun of the sax solo. I love Eric's sax solo here. And I love that I love the way it's brought in because you have no sense there's going to be a sax solo because it's all just vocal and string. And then the string dies down slowly, like it kind of floats and stops. And there's just this mini moment of silence, like just a little bit of air. And then Eric comes in and blasts that sax. And I just think it's such a wonderful solo. I love it. And then the one thing I noticed too, and the one thing I was thinking about, Jared, and I'd love to hear your take on it. The only version of this song that's just one voice is Sinead.
Correct.
Every Prince version of this song has not just multiple Prince vocals, because we've seen that in a lot of his songs, right? Where he just layers his vocal in and he allows his voice to be the backing vocal.
Yeah.
He's always had this song in his mind as a somewhat of a duet.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
And I was pondering why. Like, why was that critical in his thinking about this particular song? Like, and the one thought I just had was in kind of putting that question in my own head and then listening to this family version, and Susanna comes in and it's different than Rosie's version, which we'll get to, right? Where she's just solo singing and Prince is solo singing and occasionally they come together. Susanna's just kind of layered on top of St. Paul in this version.
Yeah.
And the image or the thought that popped in my head was the idea that both of these people in this relationship are feeling exactly the same way, and how more devastating this idea is because of that they're both saying, I miss you, you miss me, but we can never get this to come together and work. But I miss you and nothing compares to you. But for some reason, we're never going to make this happen.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So there was just, I don't know if you had put, if that question even popped in your head at all about this idea of why a duet for Prince with this particular track.
It has actually, and I have a different take on it, but this is what's great. I love when we have different, because I like your take. It's interesting. And this is my take. See, to me, again, the Rosie version is slightly different because she's singing solo. She's got verses of her own.
Right.
I thought, to me, that when we hear Susanna's backing vocal in both tracks, that we are hearing, maybe I'm extrapolating too much, but I feel like we're hearing the protagonist hearing what he wishes was happening.
Oh, I like that take too, though. That's a really interesting take.
Yeah, that he's wishing that she would feel the same way But again, to go back to the point I made earlier, the reason I think that is that because I don't ever get the sense that the person being sung to is ever walking back in the door, has any sense of anything other than this is now over. So to me, it's a fantasy. I'm fantasizing that this object of my desire is echoing my feeling, and then maybe one day she will walk back in the door. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. It's a fantasy to me.
You know what? And maybe to even give that more validation, your idea was what I found interesting too in terms of the I talked about the OOOOs being so prominent in that demo, the original version. It's certainly very prominent here as well. It's a little more soft with Susanna's inclusion, whatever. But, you know, the strings echo that line, the notes. Yeah. The only time that the saxophone plays it is at the very end of this song with the family version, where he says, hey, I'm willing to give this another try. And the horn blasts is kind of a little jarring. And I actually wrote, What's the point of that? Is it a warning? Is it like this isn't going to happen? Because I kind of thought that blast was sort of like it took the prettiness of the strings away of the idea, like maybe you said the fantasy of it is being represented by the strings arrangement, whereas the sax is saying, dude, fucking reality, man, this ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Exactly.
Because after that moment, right. The two vocals, Susanna and St. Paul, they kind of just start going, and it swirls and it swirls, and then it just lands and it's over.
Yeah.
So I kind of dig where you're coming from, because I think that whole idea with the sax kind of plays into what you were saying about the fantasy.
Yeah, I think that's right. I feel like it's a ghost. It's a ghost that's singing to him. Yeah. The ghost inside his mind or his heart or both of those things. I also, like you, Ed, I like this version. I won't go so far as to say it's the definitive version, but I will tell you that when you very graciously gave me the family album on vinyl as a gift, which I cherish very much, and I listened to this through my headphones, it is striking. It's a striking track. And I like the whole family album. And again,
we'll go back to that at some point.
We're going to get back to that. But I really like that whole album. But the song is striking. But I also think that speaks to, again, just like this is an incredibly well-written piece of music. It's an incredibly well-written pop song that has a lot to say. It has a lot of layers to it. And you could put almost anybody in front of it and they can make something work. You know, I'll just say really quickly, if anybody hasn't seen it, when Prince died, the great country Americana artist Chris Stapleton who's got an incredible singing voice. Mm-hmm. He does an absolutely heart-rending version of Nothing Compares.
Oh, wow. I have to listen to it. I don't think I've heard it. So I have to.
It's really worth seeing. And he just absolutely destroys it. And it's just one of those songs. It is, and to me, Ed, I think we might have even said this to each other back when we did the Hits album. It's shocking to me that he gave this away.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that. Definitely.
That he gave it away to the family. And I know the family was his project. Like, I get that. But, like, what if this had been on Purple Rain? What if this had been on Around the World in a Day? What if it had been on Sign of the Times? What if it was on Parade? You know, like, those albums, all towering achievements in their own right, which we've talked about at length, it would have exponentially improved them even that much more, and you didn't think it could.
Yeah, well.
You know, so that's a great mystery to me. And I don't know that we'll ever get a satisfactory answer as to why he really gave it away, because it's a stunner. So anyway, that's the family version. Folks, it's hard to find the family. It's not streaming, but you can find it on YouTube if you've never heard it.
Yep.
And then if you get lucky, hunt around your local record shop. You can find it on vinyl. And I think $20 or so, right?
It's not super expensive. No,
not super expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jared, maybe I'll let you, because I think you're probably as familiar, if not more familiar, of Sinead's version than I am. Do you want to talk through Sinead's and then I'll join in after?
Yes. Yeah, I'm happy to. Thanks. So here we go, folks. We all know this version, 1990, from the album I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got.
It's been 7 hours and 15
you took your love away. I go out every night and sleep all day. Since you took your love away. Since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. I can see whomever I choose. I can eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant, but nothing, I said nothing can take away.
The video is, you could argue that the video in conjunction with the track is what made the song a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this next line, I think I've said this before too, and I say this without any attempt to diminish who Sinead was as an artist. It also just so happens that she was stunningly beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sort of worked hard to find different ways to not be, you know, whatever, stereotypically female, whatever, all that stuff. Like, you know, very famously, she had longer hair before her first record came out. And when they told her to look more like a girl, she cut it off.
That's, yep.
That's who she was.
Yeah.
She didn't tell her who she was. So anyway, the Sinead version, Ed, as you mentioned, it's just her. It's very stark in terms of instrumentation. It's closer to the family than Prince's original demo. There's no saxophone. We have keyboard strings. I don't think those are real strings. I think those are keyboard strings. And then we do have drums. We do have drums in this.
Yep.
In this.
Yep.
I think the drums are really essential here, actually, because for two reasons. One, that sort of drumming is very essential in Irish music. The sound of the drum is a big thing. Power of the drum. I also think that in some respects, the drum as an instrument is the only thing that can match the power of Sinead's vocal.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Her voice is so powerful. I mean, really, I think once in a generation kind of a singing voice that had a, there was a, it could be cold in its sort of like crystalline glory. But it could also be incredibly fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And the drum is what sort of highlights that, you know. There's a track on that album called I'm Stretched Out on Your Grave, which is just her singing over the famous funky drummer rhythm.
Oh, I'll have to give that a listen.
And,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's just that and then Irish pipes and that's it. And her voice. It's incredible. So anyway, the thing about Sinead's version is that by all accounts, she's not singing to a lover. She's not singing to a boyfriend or a husband or anything else like that. She's singing to her mother.
Right.
So when she sings the line, all the flowers that you planted, Mama, in the backyard, she's literally talking to her mother. Her mother had been dead, was gone. And her mother was incredibly abusive to Sinead. And so that song, that aspect of this interpretation, gives a level of pain that I don't think is present in any other version, because they're singing about something else.
Yep.
Right? They're singing about relationships, romantic relations. Sinead's singing about her mother. And how I read it is the desperation, nothing compares to you, the desperation of a child so badly wanting her mother to love her and willing to do her anything to make that happen. So, Ed, I think we talked about this as well. The reason Sinead became a star wasn't just this track, and it wasn't just this video. It was the fact that a single tear runs down her face in the video.
Yeah.
That's what makes her a star. And again, by all accounts, from what I've read and different sources, she wasn't prompted to do that. It just happened.
Yep.
And that the raw honesty of that. And again, if folks remember, the video is very simple. It's just a shot of, you know, a close up of Sinead's face. There's a couple of moments when we have sort of an instrumental breakdown where you see Sinead sort of walking through a garden, but there's no sax solo. It's just that we hear the right. We hear that. But otherwise, the video is just framed on her face. And so when that single tear falls out of her crystal blue eyes on her like ivory white skin, and she's wearing like a black turtleneck or something.
Yep.
It was stunning. It was an absolutely stunning moment. And when you realize that it's not because of a lost lover, it's because of her dead mother who abused her. I think that gives it a certain level of raw emotional power in this interpretation that the other versions don't have. And also, I will say briefly that again speaks to the greatness of the song. When you are able as an artist to extrapolate things from a song, a piece of writing, a piece of art, whatever it might be, other people are looking at the same exact thing and they don't see that. They see something else. That makes a great work of art when it is open to multiple strains of interpretation, like Shakespeare, which is why I always go see Shakespeare, because every time you see it, someone's doing something entirely different than what you've seen before.
Right.
Right. And so to me, that speaks again to the genius of the songwriting. We have rehashed. We have talked about the relationship Sinead had with Prince. We've talked about it, Ed. I talked about it on the episode we did with Rob Harvilla last year. We don't need to go into it again, except to say that it was fraught, and they had radically different interpretations of the one time that they met each other. I leave it for all you to decide what is what there. But I'm sorry that we weren't able to have maybe further collaborations, because I think it would have been really unique. And I think it could have, I wish they could have found some more common ground to stand on. There's a lot of reasons why they probably couldn't, not the least of which is what they shared a manager history, and that was apparently very fraught. So there was that. But anyway, I've rambled on. Ed, tell me what your take is on this.
No, I mean, you had such a beautiful take on it. I mean, I'll just kind of march through the track a little bit here as I took some notes about listening. But, you know, in terms of the arrangement, I mean, you spoke to this, but similar in some ways to the family version in this respect, use of strings. However, they're even more simplified than even the arrangement Clara Fisher puts together. And I don't think his is overly complex, but it's just like it holds the note. It holds a note, and it kind of just carries the note through various measures, just to the different, you know, changes chords, holds, just holding notes. Very subtle piano comes in, just a couple chords. But all why? Because you don't need to get complicated when you have a voice like Sinead's. You don't need to do this. And this is the thing that I think makes that vocal maybe one of the best vocal performances of any pop song, potentially, is we know, I think you and I know, even though I'm not a huge fan, I've heard some of her other material, and I've heard her range, which is insane.
It's insane.
She can go all over the place. She can make her voice do a bazillion types of things.
Yes.
She's so controlled in this song.
Yes, that's right.
And that's where I think the beauty, the pure beauty of her vocal here is that she doesn't overdo anything. She just adds enough oomph and enough accenting here and there in certain ways, turns it up a notch, turns it down a notch. It's so effective because she could have vamped like a crazy person if she wanted with this material, but she chose not to. And I was going to bring this in at the end of my review, but I'll bring it up now because I think it's so much related to the vocal. It reminds me, and Jared, you probably know this better than I do. I forget who said this. It's related to an acting idea where I forget who said this, but it was something about, I could give two shits if you can cry on stage, because anybody can make themselves cry, right? I want to see you try not to cry. I want to see you try to work and fight back the cry. And that's exactly what she does in this song. It's her. You can hear her battling through. And again, the video just nails this idea because it visualizes it. She's fighting through these emotions and trying to hold them back. And guys, again, go back. And it was devastating, given that she just passed, to watch this video today, because it just, it destroyed me. I got emotional watching it. Yeah. I mean, she can't hold, like, she's looking into your soul, guys. Yeah. And there's times that she can't even keep the eye contact that she needs, because she's so vulnerable, angry. There's so many different levels of emotion going on through her, presenting the material through the video, that it's just an amazing piece of work. I'll just keep it there, because I think you said enough about the arrangement, that I think you said enough and more. And to understand the background that she's thinking about her mother and that relationship through this song makes it even 10 times more powerful than if you just hear this song as it is on the radio or through your headphones. It's amazing.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Like Ed, I just want to echo Ed and say, if you haven't seen the video in a little while, or you've never seen it, pull it up. It is worth your time. There's lots of great live versions. And I'll say this too, one last quick little thing about Sinead in this version. So as everyone knows, Sinead is from Ireland, and the great Irish singer Glenn Hansard, folks may not know, Glenn Hansard was in a band called The Frames. Now he's got a sort of solo album. He's done all kinds of great stuff. Every year at Christmas time, Glenn Hansard hosts a free busk. He busks in the street to raise money for Dublin's homeless. And he gets his famous friends to help him out, like Damien Rice and Bono, and then Sinead occasionally. So there's a YouTube video. I think the title is Greatest Busk Ever, in what's called Grafton Street. And Grafton Street in Dublin is sort of like a shopping district. And the street is absolutely mobbed with people, just mobbed every which way you go. And all the performers, including Bono and Sinead, they're just standing on a box. There's no amplifiers. There's no microphones. There's no gear. There's not a stage. It's just them standing in a circle together as a crowd crushes them. So Sinead gets up on this box and she makes a joke. She's like, I'm going to sing this song, which absolutely no one knows, you know, and she goes into Nothing Compares, and she sort of conducts the crowd to sing the, And I will say this, I could be wrong, but it seems, at least in that moment, Sinead is joyful about singing the song at Christmas time around so many people. So that's a great video clip as well. And you can see Bono hops up and he sings, Baby, Please Come Home. You know, it's Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. It's a great video clip.
You know, and before we move on to the last version of this, I'm going to try this, and we may not keep this in the recording, but I thought it was interesting. I tried to pull, I got to get a little keyboard out here for us.
Oh, yeah, get it, son, get it.
Because I thought what was interesting is, again, we talk about the prominent use of Prince doing, right? That's basically the ah-ahs.
Yeah.
But then Sinead's version basically goes like this.
Yeah.
Which I just think it's almost Gregorian chant-like, the way it comes out. And I just thought that was such an interesting choice, because all the other versions have that so prominently placed in the track. It's a little buried in Sinead. It's still there. You can certainly hear it, but she changes the notes and it hits that way. It goes really low and pops up, which I just found very fascinating. Such an interesting, different way of looking at that part of it.
I completely agree with you, and I'm glad you pointed that out. I'll just say, to echo that, it is like a chant. It's almost it's like what you hear in a funeral.
There you go.
It's like what you hear inside a church at a funeral.
There you go. There it is.
And so I think that's it. So.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. Hopefully you could hear that piano. We'll see if that came in when we take a listen.
We'll see if it came through.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. We'll move on to the last version. Now, we already reviewed this. I don't know if we need to get too deep on it, but Prince then releases a live version of this with Rosie and the New Power Generation band in 93.
been 7 hours and 13 days since you took your love away. Since you took your love away, since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. I can see whoever I choose. Eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant. But nothing, nothing can take away this blues. Oh. Nothing compares, nothing compares to you. Oh, baby. It's been so.
We talked about it a bit when we did that review of the hits and the B-sides. Honestly, I'll be honest with you. Of the versions, this is probably my least favorite version, I think, of all the versions.
I know you feel that way, and I don't feel that way. But yeah, go ahead.
I'll make one quick comment because we talked about this a bit on that pod. And go back and listen to it. It deserves another listen, guys. Go back and take a listen to that the hits version and the B-sides. I honestly think the thing that takes away from the song for me, and I do love Rosie. This is not I love Rosie, always loved her voice, and she's great. I honestly think the vamping, because there's a lot of vamping in this live version between Prince and her kind of going back and forth. I actually think it takes away from the power of the song. As we talked about with Sinead's kind of controlled emotion, and even the other versions with the family. It's certainly not my favorite. Let's put it that way. I think you feel a little differently, though, Jared.
I do. I'm a big fan of it. I'm a big fan of it because Rosie Gaines and her epic voice and the power of it, and I'm all here for it. I do think that there is something to it being a live version, that the power of the live setting, and as we know, our guy Prince was a consummate live performer.
True.
He excelled and grew in those areas, and I think he works really hard to let Rosie have a moment on this, and she does. She takes the moment and she runs away with it. It's an entirely different version than the other three. It's entirely different. It's got a different tone. I mean, Ed, again, we mentioned already that this is more of a duet because Rosie has solo lines.
Yeah, absolutely. So
this version is more of a conversation as opposed to, you know, what we've heard before. I actually think that somehow it's more joyful than every other version.
I can hear that.
Maybe because it's live, maybe because it's a duet and we have them singing to each other and it sounds so good and it feels so good. So there is something slightly more joyful in it to me. I'm a big fan of it. I think you're in the minority for not liking it as much. I'm just going to say that right there.
I don't think that's true. And I know our friends out there will come to my defense as all they always do. Which is fine.
We'll see.
No, it's all good. No, I mean, listen, again, like you said, it talking through these four versions just validates what you just said before, which is what a brilliant piece of songwriting, right? Because you have, four pretty distinctly different takes on the same track and they're all effective. Like I wouldn't say the live version is a bad song or a bad version.
No, of course not.
It's just not my favorite of what's been out there, but like they're all compelling, gorgeous versions of this amazing song.
That's right. I couldn't agree more. And we were happy to do this today in quick honor of a troubled but brilliant artist.
Absolutely. Yep.
And again, folks, I'll encourage you, and I know Ed will as well. I know Ed's going to do some exploration of her back catalog.
Yep.
If you haven't given Sinead a thought in 30 years, if you haven't really looked at what she's done, give it a look. Even her very last album, which I got to say has a terrible title. Her last album was 2014, so almost 10 years ago. And it's titled "I'm Not Bossy, I'm the Boss."
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, not a great title for me, but the music on it is excellent. There's some really great music on it. And I'll say too, people probably heard this. This is a shame. You know, Sinead apparently had nearly finished a new album, was planning a tour in 2024 to specifically New Zealand and Australia first, and then was going to come to the States and into Europe. We're going to get that, which is too bad. Maybe that album will come out. I bet it will at some point.
Yeah,
I would think so. But she was a great artist who lived a troubled life, as so many of the greats do.
Yeah.
So Sinead, we hope you rest easier now than you did in life.
Yep.
And give her records a listen, folks. You'll enjoy
it. Absolutely.
Them.
I completely co-sign everything you just said, Jared. Absolutely. We won't do, you know, we haven't obviously structured this like our typical pod where we did our facts and figures and kind of sprinkled that about. I don't have a quiz question, but I will throw a factoid out as we exit, which is an interesting thing that I just found as I was prepping for this one really quickly, was our friend Miles Davis.
Yes.
Requested from Prince, could he do an instrumental of this song? And Prince didn't allow it and thought it was a corny idea to do a trumpet version of a song that already existed.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. You're telling me that Prince said no to Miles Davis?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing here. And if this factoid is true.
That's staggering. That might be the most amazing thing about this whole song, that Miles Davis requested to do an instrumental version of it and Prince said no.
I'm surprised. Listen, yes, I hear you.
Wow. Wow.
I hear
you.
So.
Well, I would have liked to have heard that. I would have liked to have heard Miles Davis take it.
Oh my God. I could only imagine. I mean, I wonder if Prince was a little like, intimidated. I mean, Miles playing a ballad, forget about it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean,
forget about it. And also, like, what does that say we rank things all the time, but if we were, you know, like Prince is on a certain level, but Miles Davis is on even another level.
Miles is his own thing for sure. And
to have Miles Davis respect that song so much that he wanted to record it. Oh my God, my heart breaks at the possibility.
Well, it's funny. And I forget where I heard this, but you know, there's that famous recording, guys, I'm sure you're familiar with it, where Prince was, I think it was the end of the Sign of the Times tour. Prince comes back to Minneapolis. He does a New Year's Eve show. Miles comes out. And there's video of this, guys, on YouTube. And he plays some solos he's brought out for It's Going to Be a Beautiful Night. And he does solos there. Well, I forget who was telling the story that, like, when Miles showed up and I think they had dinner and there was this weird kind of competition between the two of them. Like, Miles was a little bit like, you know, the guys were trying to, like, whose dick's bigger?
Right.
You know, like, totally, you know, totally. Like, so totally. I don't know. Maybe that was part of it. The Prince was like,
I'm sure it was.
I don't know. Because Prince in the past had given Miles material to use, which Miles turned down.
Yeah. Right.
So this might have been a, you know, hey, tit for tat. Like, you're not going to.
That's
okay. Yeah.
I 100% believe that, because let us not forget that our guy had an ego.
Miles had a huge ego too, baby.
Miles had an ego.
Oh man, yeah. I don't know how you could fit those egos in the same building. Yeah.
Did you see that movie Miles Ahead, where Don Cheadle plays Miles Davis? Did you ever see that?
I don't think I have yet. No,
it's pretty good. It's worth a watch.
Yeah, I'll give it a watch for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a sidebar.
All right.
So that's it for this quick little hit pod. We, as Ed mentioned at the top of this episode, we do have another little hit pod we are going to come back with before we dive back into what will be the, the fourth season.
Right. The fourth decade of Prince's recording career. Sadly, the final one. But yeah. And
sadly, the final one. It won't be the end of the show, folks, but it'll be the end of, you know, the chronological timeline of stuff that he himself was releasing.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
So anyway, we hope everyone's having a great summer. Stay cool, stay comfortable. It's hot out there.
It's hot, folks. Boys and
girls, it is hot out there. So be careful, hydrate, go to see some music, go to the movies.
Yep.
Get out with somebody, listen to Prince, listen to Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah, please do. Do all those things, folks.
Do all those
and
things.
Please know we do miss you guys too. Life gets busy, guys. And sometimes, it's amazing that we've got so many pods under the belt at this point. We look forward to more of them, of course. But we kind of need a little bit of a break with all the craziness going on in our separate lives here. Folks, I'll say in terms of the listenership out there, nothing compares to you guys. So I appreciate the love and the support as always. And until we talk to you fairly shortly, I would say, let's say this to them, Jared.
Let us say, may you live
to see
the dawn.
All right, folks. Have a good one. Love you guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
All the flowers that you planted, mama, in the backyard.
Rosie Gaines.